Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's June 19, 2020 program, Bouncing Forward, Eugene and Lane County Focus on Recovery. This is the 36th program of our 2019-20 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Before we begin today's program, I'd like to focus on the events of the past few weeks, which have been wrenching. The killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Armand Arbery, and many other Black Americans have fueled massive protests across the country and focused our attention on racial inequality, social injustice, bias in law enforcement, and flaws in our criminal justice system. The City Club of Eugene is planning two Friday forums focused on the issues raised by recent events. On July 24th, a panel will discuss accountability and transparency in local law enforcement, as well as the redefinition of the scope of policing. Eugene Police Auditor Mark Gissiner and Eugene Chief of Police Chris Skinner, and Ibrahim Kolobali, president of the Eugene Springfield NAACP and a member of the Eugene Human Rights Commission, have agreed to participate in the upcoming programs, along with other knowledgeable scholars and activists. We hope you will join us virtually by visiting our webpage, cityclubofeugene.org, or viewing the program on our Facebook page, or listening to KLCC 89.7 at 7 p.m. on the Mondays following the Friday presentations. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsors. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable health care services and to improve the health of our members and the communities that we serve. More information at www.kp.org. Support comes from the University of Oregon. Since 1876, the U of O has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health is proud to serve Eugene, Lane County, and beyond. As your hometown healthcare partner for more than 80 years, Peace Health's mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. Lane Community College transforms lives through learning. It provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, visit lanecc.edu. We would also like to acknowledge the generous support from the City of Eugene and from Lane County. On to today's program. The vigorous community-wide effort to slow the spread of the coronavirus achieved its goals thanks to clear direction and broad cooperation. As we enter phase two of loosening restrictions, local leaders begin to focus on long-term recovery. What can we do to ease back into a normal that works better for all of us? Sarah Maderi, City Manager of Eugene, and Steve Mokrahiski, Lane County Administrator, will describe the state of the current city and county emergency responses and share their plans for addressing the issues ahead. The effects of the pandemic will shape thinking about the needs of the workforce and the community for a long time. How can the city and the county work together on housing, homeless strategies, and business recovery to transform the lessons learned recently into innovative and sustainable solutions for the long term? I would like to thank Mary Layton, past president of City Club and a longtime member of the City Club Program Committee, for organizing today's Friday forum. We have two speakers today, Steve Mokrahiski and Sari Maderi. Steve joined Lane County in May 2014. He has served in county government leadership in Oregon, in Nevada, and Wisconsin for more than 20 years. Steve received a BA from Marquette University and an MBA from the University of Wisconsin. He is also a public policy graduate of the Les Aspin Center for Government in Washington, D.C. In 2019, Steve was elected to the position of president-elect of the National Association of County Administrators. Sarah Maderi, Eugene City Manager, having just been officially appointed after serving in a pro tem role during this past year. Sarah has 23 years of experience with the City of Eugene, including 9 years as City Manager, 6 years as the Executive Director of Planning and Development Department, and 2 years as the Executive Director of Eugene's Public Works. Sarah holds degrees in landscape architecture and organizational leadership and was recognized by the International City-County Management Association, ICMA, with an Excellence in Leadership Award. Today, we'll start the program with Steve.
It's great to be here with all of you, the Eugene City Club. My name is Steve Mokrzyjewski. I'm the Lane County Administrator. And Sarah and I are looking forward to sharing some thoughts with all of you in a really challenging and dynamic time that the last several months have been. I wanted to start by offering just a brief overview of the COVID-19 public health response effort that Lane County has been focused on, along with various partners in the community, and then talk about a few other issues, and then I'll turn it over to Sarah Madary for her presentation. So Lane County began, I wanted to start just by sharing that if you go back to January 21st, if you remember that time, January 21st was the first reported positive case of COVID-19 in the United States. On January 22nd, the day after that, Lane County began its efforts to work with the Oregon Health Authority and other agencies in our community to begin response. On January 27th, just 5 days later, Lane County conducted its first coronavirus partner coordination meeting with Peace Health and the University of Oregon. On February 6th, Lane County activated an incident command system structure to coordinate emergency response efforts, and our public health officials began having neighborhood association presentations about COVID-19. On March 2nd, Lane County opened a joint information center and held its first daily press briefings. On March 3rd, Lane County held its first healthcare provider and partner coordination call. On March 9th, Lane County held its first internal COVID-19 planning meeting with managers. On March 10th, the county opened a non-emergency call center for the public to contact with questions. And it wasn't until March 17th that we had our first positive reported case of COVID-19 in Lane County. And so I offer that brief timeline as an illustration of some of what we believe has been our effective efforts to date to manage this global pandemic in our local community, and that is that we were prepared and worked early on with our community partners to respond to this effort. Nearly 2 months in advance of when we first had a positive case in Lane County, we were doing preparation work with various community partners. And that has to date led us largely to be able to flatten the curve of this virus in Lane. So I want to just provide a current status report. Lane County has 8 active positive cases in the community and 2 additional presumptive cases. Most of the new cases, it's important to note that we are seeing have a direct epidemiological link to other known cases. So there's been a household transmission between people in a household or other contact with another known case. And pretty much all of the new cases that we are seeing are a result of our public health's proactive sentinel testing. So this is as opposed to passive testing where you would go in and receive a test on your own. Sentinel testing is really this proactive outreach that we're doing to make sure that we're targeting where the virus is and identifying any positive cases, doing contact tracing with our public health officials, and giving us the ability then to isolate, quarantine, and get people healthy and not spread the disease. Also important to note, and one of the reasons that Lane County has been able to move into phase 1 and now phase 2 is that we have 0 hospitalizations. The peak of hospitalizations was around 6 to 8 individuals, and right now we have no hospitalizations. So that flattening the curve really was largely about giving us our healthcare providers, our hospitals and healthcare providers, the ability to have the equipment and the facilities to treat individuals that need to be hospitalized. We've conducted over 16,000 total tests for Lane County residents. And so you see, you get a bit of a picture, 8 positive, currently active cases, 2 presumptive, 79 people have recovered from the virus, and that requires 72 hours without symptoms and with no medication. So this effort, it needs to continue. Our focus on proactive public health measures, both from a county public health perspective and the testing and personal protective equipment, coordination with healthcare providers, contact tracing, all of that is continuing. We're conducting on average about 500 tests per day. They range anywhere from 300 to 500 per day in partnership with our healthcare providers and private labs who actually conduct the testing. All of that needs to continue. And then our efforts as a community, the other reason we've been successful is our community took this seriously from the beginning, and we participated in the stay-at-home order. We participated in other public health requirements, such as wearing a face covering when you leave your house and maintaining at least 6 feet of physical distance from other people, washing your hands regularly, using hand sanitizer, not touching your face. All of those public health measures need to become part of our daily routine, something that we just get used to doing for the foreseeable future. So I want to segue into phase two and what the transition into phase one and now phase two in Lane County has meant. We began, Lane County was approved to move into phase two on June 5th. That was the first day for counties to be able to move into phase two. And that included updated guidance from the state for restaurants, pools, event venues, recreational sports, and more. It's important to remember, and there's oftentimes confusion about the different levels of government. What is the state responsible for? What are counties responsible for? What are cities responsible for? Important to note that the types of restrictions that are relaxed in each of the phases and by how much are determined by the state of Oregon, and it's counties throughout the state of Oregon that are responsible for demonstrating that our local systems, both private and public systems, are in place to continue providing a public health response to COVID-19. So we've had to demonstrate things like, do we have the testing capacity? Do we have personal protective equipment for all of our healthcare and first responders? Do we have hospital beds available for people if they need to be hospitalized? Do we have the staff available to do contact tracing? All of these things have to be demonstrated by the county government to the state in order for us to move into those. And then we follow the state guidelines on what types of restrictions need to remain. So and there's been a lot of sort of debate and discussion about increased ability to go out and participate in more of our daily routines that we had prior to the statewide shutdown. And we really feel like this is a balancing act. We need to maintain those good public health practices, actively manage this virus in our community. And we're doing that to date. We also need to make sure that people are able to get back to their jobs. We've had record numbers of unemployment, which impacts people's abilities to pay their rent and pay their bills, which impacts their ability to stay housed and support their families. And so all of these things are interconnected. And so making sure that we have the ability to safely open and get people back to work in a safe manner and continue to be employed and have a healthy economy where people can participate in all aspects of our community is really important. So access to local businesses and creating the ability to carefully socialize in smaller groups is where we are with phase two. And again, as I mentioned, our curve remains flat in Lane County, and the spread of the virus is limited in that, you know, widespread hospitalization cases in Lane County are not happening. So I'd like to transition and talk a little bit about what we've done as an organization. I know Sarah will talk about this for the city of Eugene. And I'll introduce that and just sort of reflect on the last comments about this global pandemic and the changes, both the social, the economic changes we've seen just from COVID-19. And then more recently, as we see this uprising of the Black Lives Matter movement and the push for racial disparities in our institutional rate and systemic racial disparities in our systems throughout the country, our state, and our local communities be changed. A movement that we in Lane County, and I know the city of Eugene and other partners, are embracing the opportunity to change, evolve, and eliminate the racial disparities that continue to exist in our systems. You put all of these things together, a global pandemic and a national uprising around issues of racial equity, we are going through an unprecedented period of change in our community and in our world in such a short amount of time that we will reflect, I think, back on 2020 as an incredible period of change and evolution and innovation in so many different corners. For our organization, one of the things, you know, I oftentimes, I've told people, many people in the last few months, that I was asked in early March, as we were thinking about, gosh, we may need to start start thinking about moving people and doing remote work and some of these things. And I was asked at a meeting before the state had shut down, you know, whether or not we as an organization in Lane County with our 1,600 employees would be able to have many of our employees work remotely. And I thought, as the conventional wisdom at the time was, well, no, we can't, we won't be able to do that on a large scale because most of our employees really have to be at work to conduct their job. And the dynamics of remote work and how we would set that up, it's just not going to work. That was my perspective and many people's perspective prior to mid-March. And then mid-March hit and we realized we didn't have an option. And we needed to send home the vast majority of our workforce and participate in the stay-at-home order like the rest of the community. And yet we needed to continue our public services in the community. And so we, in the matter of a week and a half to 2 weeks, moved a transition up to 900 of our employees, almost two-thirds of our workforce, to work remotely, which is a huge tight. And I know that the city of Eugene and other local governments and private entities have done similar efforts. In Lane County, we didn't shut some of our services, were many of them were suspended for on-site service, but pretty much everything was up and running to be conducted virtually or over the phone. And then of course we have services, whether it's the jail or clinics or other types of in-person services that law enforcement, public safety, first responders that have to do their work in the field. So, you know, we didn't think we'd be able to do telemedicine in such a short period of time. We didn't think that we'd be able to have developmental disabilities staff working remotely and conducting their interactions with their clients from a remote location virtually, as we're doing here with Eugene City Club. So all of that happened in a really quick period of time. And I think it's one of the things that, as challenging as this period has been for everyone, it's really an incredible time of catalytic transformational change where we are pushed to do things we never thought were possible, but this crisis and the chaos that ensues from the crisis has forced us to think differently, to think outside of the constraints that our own minds create for us, to think about how we can meet the needs, the demands of our community in new ways. So that's all to say that two-thirds of our workforce has largely been working remotely. We're in the process of transitioning some of those employees back, but we will continue to have a large portion, several hundred of our employees working remotely for as long as possible, because that then allows for us to have the rest of the employees that need to be on site in order to conduct their work because they have personal interactions or the only way that the public can and clients and customers can receive services is directly, for them to be able to do it safely on site with limited other staff in the area to maintain the 6 feet of distancing. We are requiring masks for our employees, a face covering if 6 feet of distance can't be maintained. And so happy to talk more about that. I know that's something that the City of Eugene and others are looking at as well. So continuing to bring back some of those services online is important. I want to, in the last few minutes of my time, talk a little bit just about economic recovery and then support for unhoused individuals in our community and rental assistance. I'll take just a minute to talk about economic recovery. Lane County, the City of Eugene, the City of Springfield stepped up early in this pandemic. In mid-March, just a week into the shutdown, to make available $400,000. We realized that Lane County couldn't do it alone, the City of Eugene couldn't do it alone, Springfield couldn't do it alone, but if we came together as local public agencies, we could pool some resources and very quickly make some limited loans, no interest loans, available to small businesses that had been impacted by COVID-19. That money was distributed, was committed, and has been distributed. It was committed within minutes of it being opened, of that program being opened on March 20th. And it shows you, and this was before the federal funding had been approved. We knew there was federal funding coming, but the cities and the county wanted to step up and say, our businesses, our small businesses are hurting right now. And those small businesses employ residents in our community who are also hurting. So let's do what we can do to provide some no-interest loans for a period of time to allow them to stay afloat. So we've done a number of other things to support businesses, including outreach and support, working with Business Oregon on lending and grant opportunities of several hundred thousand dollars for small businesses, working with Dev Northwest on those resources, providing financial assistance just in terms of how to manage through a period of crisis like this, looking at infrastructure needs such as broadband access for businesses, particularly in remote areas. So continuing to support our small, local, impacted businesses as a result of COVID-19 is a priority for Lane County, and I know for our cities as well. So I want to touch on, there's been a lot of effort that Lane County and the City of Eugene and Springfield and other partners have done to support unhoused individuals. We knew early on that as the state stay-at-home order was put in place, for those of us that have homes, we can go home and maybe we can work remotely and we can stay safe and quarantined with our families. But for the unhoused individuals in our community, they don't have a place to go. And the real impacts happened when the shutdown and the limit of number of people in spaces impacted the Eugene Mission and the St. Vincent de Paul Dusk to Dawn operation. It limited the capacity it limited beds by around over 300 beds. So we lost capacity within the Mission and St. Vincent de Paul of over 300 beds. And so Lane County and the City of Eugene stepped up and said, we need to identify sites to put people. We need to identify resources. We opened up the fairgrounds, a site in Springfield. I know the City of Eugene and Sarah will talk about the camping sites that the City of Eugene opened up. All of this was done in coordination, and we made several hundred additional emergency shelter beds available for unhoused residents in Lane County for several months. And now as things are opening back up, we've worked to transition individuals to connect them with services, shelter, and housing options. We've also rental assistance, and we will continue, and we'll talk about a little bit more maybe in our interaction between Sarah and I, the purchase of the former VA hospital on River Avenue that we made and our plans. It's currently being used as an unhoused COVID-19 recovery center for unhoused individuals and is planned to be transitioned into a shelter and navigation center, low barrier public shelter and navigation center for unhoused individuals after COVID-19. So focusing on supporting and navigating and connecting our unhoused individuals in Lane County to shelter and to housing continues to be a high priority. We've also made available nearly $1 million in funding for nearly 1,300 individuals for rental assistance. And the state, through federal funding, has made available around $900,000 per month beginning in July through December of 2020 for rental assistance. And so we have committed to support for 1,300 residential assistance applications that have already been completed, and then we'll continue the process of distributing that nearly $1 million a month from July through December to individuals who are in need. We've also launched an energy assistance program of nearly $600,000 that is one-time payments towards energy bills for either electricity, natural gas, home heating oil, propane, wood pellets, and wood. And so all of these resources are going in a recognition that we need to be helping and supporting individuals who are currently unhoused as well as those who are at risk of becoming unhoused. I'll conclude by saying that Lane County, as the City of Eugene and other public agencies, have recently gone through their process for their budgets. And in Lane County, all of our funds are structurally balanced mostly without the use of reserves. We are using some reserves in order to manage the downturn in revenues. But we've included $1.3 million in additional resources in our general fund to support the future operation of the Shelter Navigation Center, as well as rapid rehousing and rapid resolution and tenant supports to get further upstream to help individuals that are at risk of becoming unhoused to help them stay in their home before they hit that point. So I know I'm at time, and I want to transition and introduce to everyone, and it really is a personal and professional pleasure for me to introduce my peer, my friend, Sarah Madary, who was just appointed unanimously by the Eugene City Council on an 8-0 vote, which is quite a feat, particularly in the middle of a global pandemic and national movement around racial equity, to have our new city manager in the city of Eugene appointed unanimously. I've worked with Sarah for several years. I think highly of her personally and professionally. And I'm really excited to continue our work together in our roles and with our organizations to do great work for our community. So Sarah, welcome.
Hello, City Club. I've missed being able to see you and have lunch with you and learn with you over these last few months. Some of you watching this show are people that I first intersected with when I came to Eugene in 1991 to start my degree in landscape architecture. So I hope you are all staying healthy and safe and well, and I look forward to when I can see you in person again. So I'm going to separate my portion of this into three segments, which is a little bit about where we've been. I think it's important to talk a little bit similar to what Steve did, where we are now and where we're going. And I know that we originally planned on this being kind of the bouncing forward from COVID-19 in our community recovery. But since that time, we've all witnessed the murder of George Floyd, the protests around the country, and importantly, what's also happened here with our police department. So I think it's important to talk about where we're going by integrating all of those things, although I will focus most of my energy on the first topic, which was COVID-19. So I never, like thinking about where we've been, I never thought in my wildest dreams that there'd be a day we'd close down our city buildings and send all of our city employees, mostly our city employees, home and quickly pivot all of our services to being virtual and work from home. I wouldn't have believed it if you had told me that was going to happen. And but here we are. And I'm really grateful to Steve and Lane County for their leadership around the public health emergency. I think the fact that we've been working so closely together on implementation of the TAC report had those relationships really strong going into this, and I think we really needed that. So we, similarly to the county, City of Eugene opened our emergency operations center in early March. So we were following behind, but also kind of ahead of the curve and understanding that this was going to have some pretty big implications for our community. And I think from my perspective, it's the first time where I've seen something where we have an emergency in your local government. Your local governments are responding to serve you in that emergency while we're also trying to run our own business and adapt and adjust our own business. And then we're all individually impacted as well. So I've never seen a situation where we have first responders who also have, they're out doing the response and putting their lives at risk while they also have people quarantined at home and being schooled in their homes. And it's just been a real complex web of stress and also has created conditions for incredible creativity, as Steve mentioned. There's so many great stories that I can tell you about the numbers of building inspections that have happened, the way that the library has adjusted their services and have a 70% increase and people accessing some of those electronic devices and electronic materials. Incredible stories, there's just so many of them. You know, planners working from home, everybody doing what they can to still serve you. And I'm really proud of how Eugene and Lane County both have done that for our community. I wanna talk a little bit about, because I know this group will be interested about some of the shelter in place decisions. So as you know, and as Steve mentioned, you know, we were faced with what do you do with people that don't have a home to stay home? So stay home, save lives. And we made a decision based on CDC guidelines that we would do to the maximum extent possible, allow people to shelter in place. And we did that at the city level by we deployed numbers of portable bathrooms and hand washing stations. We already were starting to bring on a mobile outreach team to as part of our TAC work, and we quickly pivoted them to being able to go out into the field and meet people where they are to deliver information, check in, and deliver some supplies. And we also included our park ambassadors and our downtown ambassadors in that work as well. So we had several teams doing that. We started off with if you're camping and you're in place and we don't have a public safety issue, then we're going to let people stay there. We later had to adjust that because we were just finding that our neighborhood parks were not able to sustain that amount of activity we were seeing in the parks while also having numbers of people camping there. So we have had to adjust along the way. It hasn't been perfect. And then we set up a couple of designated temporary shelter sites. We have two at Amazon Park and one at Peterson Barn. And we stood those up with very little notice to neighborhoods. And by little notice, I mean our city councilors were given a couple of days notice in the neighborhoods same day. We're doing this today. And I felt really strongly that our job number one, was flatten the curve. And we didn't have time or ability to have long community conversations about if this is the right place or not the right place. So we chose community centers because we knew they were closed, but we could access them. And as things start to open up, we would need to find a different solution. So we were committed to not closing those down. Let me just say there was one thing else. So where we are now is as we're starting to reopen, we're committed to not closing those down until we had a location for our residents. So we've had really good experience with the designated temporary shelter sites. They've been a little bit of a variation of our rest stop model because we've actually had more resources available for the residents that are there. And it seems to be working really well. So I can say confidently this week that we have locations for them to go, including another microsite. And people will start moving this week as we prepare to open up our community centers more fully for summer camps. We're also looking at, as we do that, including some more metrics and stabilization, metrics around stabilization, people's health, their economic conditions, social conditions, length of stay. We're looking for ways to be able to measure what are the actual success with these sites. Our mobile outreach teams will continue, so they're just adjusting to do the work that we were already anticipating would be good. They've learned a lot through this process that's going to help them. We opened our park restrooms last week, and we are starting to scale back some of the portable restrooms and hand washing stations, and we have all of our outreach teams are helping determine where they're most needed, and that's where we're keeping them. Our parks have also reopened with a lot of their fun activities. So we're opening up playgrounds and we're opening up all the courts and basketball, skate parks. Amazon Pool is opening on June 22nd for lap swim. So things are starting to feel a little bit like we'll have your summer in Eugene, although I know it's really, really, really different. And as Steve said, we're hoping through all of this that everybody continues to distance and wear face coverings where they can't, and importantly, wash their hands and use hand sanitizer, because I think one of the things I've learned through this is the devastation, especially to small businesses, local businesses, has been hard already, but if they have to do it again, it will be, feels completely unsustainable. Although, you never know, we've been super creative through all this, but I really hope people follow those guidelines. We've done some other great things with the business community. We started up a business help team, which people have been asking us to do for a long time. So that team is in planning and development, and they are set up to assist employers as they're seeking to kind of safely reopen. They're helping with financing options, reopening guidelines, and other topics. And they have an email address that I can share with the group and can put on your website. We started this right-of-way seating and streeteries. You may have heard about that, but as businesses have started to reopen, restaurants have started to reopen, you know, especially the small ones need to have space between their tables. That's really hard to do. So We are allowing them to I signed an administrative order that really simplified the process for people to get a permit for that. So it streamlined it, it made it free. And we're allowing people to move out into the right of way and even into parking stalls. And in some cases where we can, we'll allow them into the street. So that's a pretty exciting time. And I think people would say, why haven't we always done that? We're also looking at using Husey Square as a public dining area that serves all the downtown restaurants, which I think is a great space for that. And we'll continue to be super flexible and adapt and evolve as we go. Similar to what Steve shared, we've pretty much gone virtual everything. So I know you know, like, this is virtual, our city council meetings are virtual, and I'll say that when we first started doing those, the attendance was, especially to speak, was lower than I anticipated. It's actually building back up. I think people are finding that to be a pretty accessible format now, and as they start to get used to it, we're seeing more of that. Last night we had 5 public hearings. It was pretty late night. Lots of people signed up. Things you don't know about necessarily is we're also doing that as a city. So we're having weekly all city meetings on Zoom. We started it not knowing how that was going to work. It was an experiment, and we're up to probably 550 connections every week. And we know some of those connections are like a fire station. So it's a lot of our employees are tuning in and engaged. People that wouldn't have always done that before. And they're craving information just like you're craving information. So I know it's really important to have those touch points. So what's ahead? I'll just say a little bit about that. You know, many people have talked about the devastation of COVID-19 is really probably more ahead of us than what we've already experienced as the reality of our economic situation settles in. We know that there's many businesses that aren't going to reopen. You've probably read about some of those already in the paper, but there's lots of other ones that are trying to figure out how are we going to do this with a limited space over limited time. You know, we have some concerns about that internally as well as we're trying to, you know, also run businesses like the Holt Center. And we just worry about that because with each of those businesses that doesn't reopen, there's a number of jobs. We already have really high unemployment. And we also know, and everybody in this room knows because you study this often, the cost of housing in this community combined with the loss of jobs leaves me really concerned about what's next. And, you know, as soon as the eviction moratorium ends, I just fear what happens with our community when we get to those crossroads. And I think it's something that we all need to be planning on, and we are. I won't go into the details of that right now because Steve covered a lot of it, and we're doing a lot of similar measures. We also know that sheltering people in place in the park system and the right-of-way system has been super positive in some ways, and then there's other ways where the impacts are just super significant, especially on those sensitive environmental areas, the riverfront, and a lot of community concerns around that. So we're going to need to have a more sustainable way of how we work through that. And then I just want to say it's not surprising that what's emerged through all of this is our long history of racism and oppression and the impacts that's had on people of color in our community and in the world. Locally, just even related to COVID, we know that our Latinx population is disproportionately impacted by COVID. And that's true across the country as it is for our Black African-American communities. So that was happening. And then we had the murder of George Floyd and the protests and concerns around police that have erupted around the country, actually around the world. It's been remarkable to me to see how COVID and this, like, we have two things happening globally, all of us experiencing at the same time. And it's happening right here. And I know there's a lot of concern about the Eugene Police Department and our own history here and our own practices and what do we need to do to reform. And so as I just have been thinking about this and thinking about whole community recovery, which is where we were talking like 6 weeks ago, and Steve probably is laughing too, like we were talking about like, okay, this is going to take a whole community recovery. How do we do this? And now I've been thinking about reform and resilience. And in my mind, it feels like we're actually due for a whole community redesign. And I don't know 100% what that looks like, but I know there's people in this room that have some really good ideas about what that will look like. And I'm so honored that the Eugene City Council thinks that I am the right person to lead that, because I'm really feeling like the opportunity and the possibilities ahead of us are, I don't think we're gonna have another chance like this to really do something different here. People are ready to talk about climate in a way they've never been able to. They're ready to talk about race in a way they've never been able to. We're ready to talk about reform in a much deeper level. And I just really think a better Eugene is ahead. Thank you.
So Sarah, let me ask you a question. There, you know, a lot of conflicting viewpoints on various issues, and we're in this time of reduced resources. Can you talk about where you see issues of conflict, different perspectives on solving certain challenges, and how to manage through that period, particularly in an era of declining resources?
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that question. Because I also forgot to talk about the resource issue. So I do think that, you know, as I talk about community redesign, which is a term I just made up while I was preparing for this. You know, anytime you're doing a design, you're really having to do that within the context of a lot of different things happening, and there's trade-offs and decisions that need to be made. And I think as we move through this time, we're also, the budget I presented that council is set to vote on next week is what I called a base camp budget, which is kind of gets you to the, you know, when you're, takes a lot of work to get to base camp, but that's not even the biggest challenge yet. But when you get there, you have kind of the resources you need and the team you need, and then you have to make some choices about where you go. So I think there's a lot out there that people that I'm hearing about. So for example, a lot of pressure and messages from people to allow people to stay in place. Keep allowing people to stay in place. That's the humane best decision, open up the parks to camping. But there's a lot of our community members that don't agree with that. And there's a lot of impacts happening in the parks that most people won't see. And I don't think our community is in agreement about this. And so there's going to be places like that where we determine we can't go back. What we were doing before wasn't working and nobody was satisfied. And so we have an opportunity now to make some different design choices. And it probably will be uncomfortable for both pieces of that. That's just one area I would point to. Do you have thoughts about that? Ways in which you see those things playing out going forward?
Yeah, I think this is sort of the essence of public policy making, right? It's not always pretty in the process, but if you do it right, you're identifying where there's common ground. As opposed to focusing on the conflict, looking at where do we actually have common ground. So I see this on the general issue of homelessness. Well, are we focused on emergency shelter and shelter beds? Or are we focused on building permanent supportive housing? Like, which one? I see this on the Black Lives Matter movement. Are we supporting eliminating racial disparities, or are we supporting law enforcement? And I don't think that any of those issues, not that every issue isn't mutually exclusive, some are, but I think, you know, the majority of the issues that we face and in my opinion, there's oftentimes too much focus on the conflict and not enough focus on where we have common ground and how to try to forge those solutions. I would actually point to like where we've been successful as organizations, Lane County and the city of Eugene, working together. It had been that kind of path, like the city was more focused on maybe emergency shelter, county more focused on housing. We've come together and said, no, we need both, right? And we need to work together towards those ends, not separately. And I would argue, you know, the same on racial issues of racial equity and the need for a robust, well-rounded public safety system that actually we need all of those things. I've got this public safety graphic. It's like a circle wheel, and it shows the traditional public safety services on the outer rim, like patrol and prosecution and jail. And on the inside are the core things like mental health services and housing and treatment. The idea is we need those touch points where we're capturing people if they're committing a crime, but we need to connect them to the service because that's actually the solution to the problem. So what's becoming increasingly difficult is the lack of resources, right? The declining revenues we're all dealing with in an environment where people need more services and more supports. And so I think it's going to call on our organizations and others in the community to come together and figure out how do we like leverage each other's strengths to find the right solutions.
Yeah, I think so too. Have you been thinking, it's one of the things that's really struck me about the last 3 weeks in particular is how fast both of our organizations are adapting to what's happening in a day-to-day basis. So even over the last 2 weeks, I've had conversations with people where they've said, but you did this. And I said, yeah, but that was yesterday. Like literally yesterday, we've already changed that. We get it. We're trying to move fast. And even like changing my words, changing my everything, right? What has been your experience with that kind of pace and change and needing some grace in how fast we adapt, but just the pace?
Yeah, I'm a little tired. I think we're all like a little tired. But I honestly, like I love these periods of change. I don't want to say that I love what we're going through because it's really disruptive and painful in so many, whether we talk about the global pandemic or the uprisings around the need for racial equity, like these are, you know, the law enforcement interactions with in some of these incidents of killings of individuals and the deaths we've seen from the pandemic, like all of this is tragic. But from that crisis and that chaos comes this like revolutionary change, and it creates just this disruption that forces us, you know, really to think differently about how we do things. So I think this is like an incredible period of innovation and creativity and thinking differently about things. Like what you're saying, well, yeah, that's what I was saying yesterday, but today it's changed. Like it's just so rapid. And the constraints that we put on things and sort of the, oftentimes government can do this, you know, we can be process oriented and we have a lot of like rules and regulations we have to follow that the private sector isn't bound by. And so it creates some stagnation or slowness in our response efforts. Well, periods like this are like, it just opens up the opportunity to solve challenges in different ways. I mean, one of the examples I've given is telemedicine. We've talked about in our clinics for years about doing telemedicine. We have 6 community health centers, federally qualified community health centers, hundreds of providers that are providing, you know, 80 to 90% Medicaid patients care. And telemedicine is always a thing to like providing it to rural communities and everything. Well, there are all these dynamics. Well, now we're doing it, right? After just a few weeks, because we were forced into that environment. So I think this idea of remote work, I think remote work in our workforce is going to be with us, you know, in some like sort of complementary dynamic for the workforce of the future. And so we're really having a lot of conversations about how do we learn from this environment and grow and capture some of the benefits. What would you say about, you've been thrust into this. You've been an interim city manager in the middle of a global pandemic and national uprisings about racial equity. Like, how have you managed in this time?
I will say to you, I have also had some days and weeks of feeling really exhausted. I'm glad you asked, because there is something really important in that, especially over the last few weeks. There's been some super, super hard, painful days, and days where I'm like, I don't know if I can do this work. And I know a lot of people have felt that way. Just like, I don't know if I can sustain this. And then, and I said this at an all city meeting, that's kind of a really great definition of white privilege, is that I can have that choice. I can make a choice about whether I want to be in this or not be in this, while others can't do that. And that's exactly why, like, we can't. We have to be here. We have to lead through this and weather the pain and weather the exhaustion and find a different way to do it, because walking away is just not an option. So I've felt, you know, I love this community. Everybody knows I'm like a giant, like, huge heart. And I just feel really motivated to be, you know, on the right side of history, as people are saying.
Yeah. You know, you brought up this issue of white privilege, and one of the things I've seen, I have 43 years of white privilege under me. And one of the things that I've seen in this national uprising has been more white people who have sort of, there's been more of an awakening, I think, where a lot of the Black Lives Movement and the need for racial equity has been pushed by people of color. And now it's becoming, I think, a more diverse crowd of a lot of white people that are saying, okay, well, I think we get it now. And, you know, your point about, we have the ability to, the definition of white privilege, to sort of decide when we can be stressed and when we don't want to deal with that. Now is like a time that it feels like we need to be the ones stepping, that we can't put it on the backs. Like, you see with these families, the Floyd family and the Arbery family, and these families who've had to go out and publicly grieve their family members who've been killed, and what they go through and all of that, and what our communities of color go through, and like the trauma and stress of doing all of this work, that it's time for those of us who've carried the privilege for centuries to step up and be like, that maybe we need to put some of this on our shoulder and drive some of this change. And I'm really excited about it. I mean, I'm excited because it feels different than it has in the past. It feels like we can commit to the change. We're acknowledging change needs to happen, and we need to be part of that. And in you and I are in positions of privilege, not only in our lives, but also in our professions, in our roles. And in my view has always been, to those who much is given, much is required. And like, we have this privilege, and let's use it to do some really good things. And I know we're going to do that. What are you thinking? And what is the city? I know that I saw Chief Skinner's comments early on in this national movement, which I thought was really a show of leadership. And I know that both you and the police chief have had a lot of discussions about this. Where is that effort at on the city's front in terms of the change that you're seeing coming?
Yeah, I think that we're working with our, it's hard to know exactly, Steve. It's a hard question to answer, because I think what I can say is both Chris and I are completely committed to doing the reform work that our community is asking for. And you know, some of those things might be quick, and some of those are longer term. You know, it's been interesting that Eugene, in some ways, has been out on the national out in the national news for some of the work we've done, in particular with cahoots. So both of us will look back. Both of us are very open about the last couple weeks, and having some moments in there we don't feel great about, and we've adapted, and we will continue to, but. You know, the police commission, the human rights commission, the CRB, the city council, everybody is talking about this. And so what I anticipate will happen is the city council will have a work session, pretty soon that will go back in and look at all of the things we learned about 21st century policing as it applies to our police department. That's what the CSI, the Community Safety Initiative, was built on, a deep analysis through the 21st century lens. We're going to go back and we'll relook at that and see, are we investing the dollars in the right place? I anticipate that we'll have some sort of task force that comes out of this that the council will lead. And so I'll be working closely with them so that they can help craft what does this need to look like and how do we need to respond in our community at this time. So it's really a partnership. And so I'm kind of in this place of, people are demanding really fast actions, like do this, do this, do this. And I think that's really important. But if you really look at the cycle of change and what really helps with lasting change is there's always this moment between awareness and action where you're actually doing this preparation phase. And I feel like that's a little bit where we are now. We're preparing, we're getting our resources, we're figuring out who needs to be at the table. And that will really drive lasting transformational change, I believe.
You know, what you're talking about is, what I'm hearing you articulate is vulnerability. A lot of listening and a lot of vulnerability. And I don't know if you listen to Brené Brown, but you know, she's got a great documentary on Netflix and she talks a lot about vulnerability and the need for us, and particularly as leaders, right? The mm-hmm. humility and vulnerability and listening that's necessary. And we need it now in our local community, in our state, in our nation, as we go through all of this. And so I really appreciate that, that perspective from you. I've enjoyed this, Sarah. Let's do it every week.
Okay.
This has been our June 19th, 2020 program, Bouncing Forward, Eugene and Lane County Focus on Recovery. Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize some gold sponsors: Jerry Detum, Architect Landscape Architect, AARP of Oregon, and Lewis Cobb. It is our expectation to have the taped conversations available by Fridays at noon. We want to thank you all for supporting us during this difficult time. Before we thank our speakers today, there are a few quick announcements. Thank you to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, PAC Info and Simplified Computing LLC, Dot Dotson's Photography, Network Charter School. And a special thank you to public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Mondays at 7 p.m. And thank you to Community Television of Lane County, Cable Channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. Next week's program will focus on business in Eugene and how they are faring as we move into Phase 2 reopening. After an extensive state shutdown, most businesses are now permitted to reopen with conditions. Reopening under these conditions and succeeding under them are two entirely different things, however. To paraphrase a great baseball movie, if you open it, they will come. How are local businesses faring with the new restrictions? How many people in Eugene feel comfortable venturing out to dine or shop or have routine medical visits? We will find out in our program next week, Reopening Eugene Business, Are We There Yet? Speakers will include Brittany Quick-Warner, John Borofsky, Casey Barrett, and Stacy Chance. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. And now I would like to thank today's speakers for a great program. Steve Mokrohiesky and Sarah Mederi, thank you very much. This concludes today's program. Be well and stay safe.